हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवामहै तेजस्विनामधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
The Yoga Sutras acknowledge the personality of Godhead in an oblique way, but only as a helper whom the advancing yogi can utilize. Ishvara pranidhanad va. Devotional meditation on God is yet another means of achieving concentration. Yoga Sutra 123. Right? So what you can see is that they want to meditate because by meditation, then they take their mind off of the material. And so their idea is to come to that liberated platform. Right? They're going to use karma as the method, but it's about that. Right? So here then, it's another means. You know, yet another means. So it means he's given other things. So that may be considered a better one or not, or this or that. But the point is it's just down to meditating on the Lord or devotional service is only an advantage for getting done what you want to do. You know, it'd be like, let's say, So, even though they're connecting to God, which we'll consider is a good thing, right? Anybody connects to God, it's always a good thing. But then there's pure devotional service. Right? So now, if we're connecting anything to God, whatever our position, but our ultimate goal is pure devotional service, then that's a nice progression. We start wherever we are, we move forward like this, because at some point, it won't be about what we're using, but about pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? But for the yogis, they're starting with that, so because of that, it's pious, they get purified, they get elevated. But as they progress, they will give up that worship of God. Right? In other words, it's just as it says here, yet another means.
So, everything other than Krishna consciousness is imperfection. Right?
Everything other than Krishna consciousness is imperfection, yes. Because, see, is that within Krishna consciousness, you can use imperfection to attain perfection because Krishna is perfect. Right? Because what are we working with? If we're working on the platform of karma, jnana, so we have karma, mystery, jnana, mystery, bhakti. But what is that karma? What is that jnana? It's Krishna. So in other words, working with Krishna is not the problem. Right? Now working with Krishna, then understanding it's connected to Krishna, now we're getting progressive. Because you can't work with anything other than Krishna since Krishna is everything. Right, really hard to do. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point is that since so we can say as yes, everything is Krishna, so therefore everybody's connected. But as a preacher, we only consider the connection when that connection is to understanding the connection to the Absolute. Right? But that's how the Uttamadhikari considers everyone devotees. Because everything is Krishna, everything's connected to Krishna, so everyone's attraction is all to Krishna. So they're seeing it on that platform, that's why they don't distinguish. But to preach, then you must distinguish. Right? So then you can discriminate who has an understanding of matter and spirit and who doesn't. Right? Then you bring them in contact with spirit. Then they start progressing until it's just about spirit. Right? Because it's starting from it's just material, and then you end with it's just spiritual. But it has to have that progression, and that will only happen when it's done with devotion. And the end goal is devotion. Otherwise, you can use the devotion to get your karma and jnana, and then people will stop. So that's bhakti, Mr. Karma, bhakti, Mr. Jnana. So that'll be the difference. So you might find that there's a yogi who's using, you know, how you say, bhakti, Mr. Karma, jnana, depending on the level that they're at, and a devotee who has faith in the form of the Lord, but they're not very developed. But they're doing karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti. But they're in a superior position than this yogi who may be very religious, very situated in their what their practice is very nicely. Does that make sense? Because it's not about this about the form. It's about why you're using the form and your understanding. Yes?
It sounds, according to this description, is that they start with material, then in the process of destroying some spiritual practices, but their goal is still material.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the whole problem, is all the processes within the material world, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions about, you know, 20 different kind of general positions of philosophy and all that that people can be in. You know, from optimist to pessimist, you know, that range there, and whether it's a Vedic optimist or pessimist or non-Vedic, you know, like that, then whether you're worshipping nature, whether you're worshipping the demigods, whether you're worshipping the supreme, you know, you have all this kind of range there and all the combinations. So then, all of them, it's all material because they're only doing this temporarily. Right? Does that make sense? So, like, let us say, in your general world religions, then, you know, they recognize the Supreme. And they have that surrender to the Supreme and following the laws of the Supreme. So that's good. Right? So they're a step ahead of others because they've had that understanding. There must be something more going on here than just chemicals. Right? And so, and generally they'll talk about if you're good, you go to heaven. You're not good, then you won't go to heaven. Right? And so very rare they'll talk about actually a relationship with God. Right? But you can bring up the principle of developing love for God. And it won't be seen as an opposing element. Right? So as a process, it's not a problem. But in the look of it, the ultimate goal, you go to heaven, is to enjoy. At that point, they're not really talking about that position of love for God. It means you could bring it up, but it's not actually the forefront of what they're thinking. Does that make sense? So it ends up to be more bhakti, Mr. Karma. Right? But by cultivation, it could easily turn into karma, Mr. Bhakti. As long as they understand the goal is the bhakti to God rather than enjoying on the heavenly platform. Does that make sense? Because that'll be the difference. The process will be the same. It's just shifting that. So it's not as difficult in principle to discuss it. Now in detail, of course, they're attached to their particular methods. Does that make sense? But for someone on their level of consciousness, it's a good thing. But if they want to advance more, then they actually have to become, you know, in a appropriate way, God conscious.
So they actually do not worship the eternal transcendental form of the world.
No, because if you ask about the form, they'll say there's no form. So that's the problem. It's they have that sentiment for the Supreme Lord, and he's a person and we have a relationship and he's nice and we should be nice and like all that kind of things, and you know that he's just and he creates, maintains, destroys, judges, witnesses, all these things. But if you push it a little bit, it'll go to impersonalism. But it's not that their goal is to merge into Brahman or into the Lord or that. It's just their knowledge runs out. And so as soon as you run out of actual transcendental knowledge, the farthest material knowledge can get you is God is great. Right? God is unlimited. God is eternal. That's as far as you can get with the material intelligence. So because they don't have knowledge past that, the end game, they're resting on material intelligence. There's some proper sentiment, but because it doesn't have a strong foundation, it's not necessarily as cultivated in a very scientific way.
It looks like sentiment is not enough.
Sentiment's not enough unless that sentiment is based on love for Krishna. Like for the gopis, the sentiment's enough, but it's directed at Krishna pleasing him. It's not about him being God. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Is that... Yeah. Yes.
But Maharaj, sometimes you say that the yogis are meditating in the Saramatma.
Yes, they are. That's what he says here. See, this is in Yoga Sutra 123, and in the second chapter it gets into detail about meditating on the Lord, what he looks like and all that.
So they meditate in the form of the Lord at forehand, and after they stop.
Yes. That means they meditating on him as Vishnu. Yes. With four hands, but then the problem is they want to merge into him. So then it goes back to, so in one sense they're more unfortunate because they know about the form of the Lord, yes, and then they reject that to merge into the Lord rather than the impersonals who don't know, yes, and merge, yes, like that.
We usually said that previous thing in the Gita. Srila Prabhupada said that the last male Maya told them that they think they are the Lord.
Yes.
And then they want to merge?
Yes. So that's the whole point, is you have the impersonal aspect. So we always have to watch out, because unless we're dealing with parampara, with the Vaishnava literature, then when it gets to that ultimate goal, it won't be. People just want to be happy. They want to get rid of misery. That's the whole drive in karma and jnana. Right? I want to be the controller and enjoyer. That's the purpose, is to be happy and give up misery. So, a karmi means he's an optimist, that by doing karma I can be happy. And the jnani is a pessimist, that you can't do any of this karma and become happy. Does that make sense? But they both have the same principle. They want to be happy. That's all they want. Does that make sense? So.
Bhakti Mishra Karma or Bhakti Mishra Jnana, these two categories, because the bhakti touches there in the karma, the jnana, will that not add to the agyata sukriti of that particular person?
Will the bhakti not add to the agyata sukriti? No, at that, if unless it's come in contact with the parampara, it'll just be piety.
Then why is it called as bhakti? Because bhakti...
Because they have to use bhakti to get it. If you're using something, you call it a relationship. Just like, let's say, somebody makes an acquaintance, is really nice to them and all that, and gets very close, and they're very personal, do so many things together, but then after some time, something's accomplished that acquaintance is able to offer, and then they stop being, have a relationship. Would we call that friendship? No, so that's why we don't call it bhakti. But they're using the method of friendship. You know? So in other words, they're calling it, you know, how you say, friendship Mr. Karma. You know what I'm saying? We're using it. But that's what the meaning is they're using it, but then they're also using the person. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's why it's not considered that way. So that's why the preaching is so important, because then the parampara devotees, they bring people in contact with actual devotional service. So that's agyata sukriti. It's called agyata because they don't know that it's bhakti or what is bhakti. They may know they're Hare Krishnas and, you know, all this, but they don't actually know what that means. So taking prasad or chanting the kirtan or thinking that they're nice people or whatever it is that you appreciate. Right? That's a jnata sukriti. But then at one time, by that further association, then that matures into shraddha. And then once you have shraddha, now you can begin the process. Right? Does that make sense? So, you have nine levels from Shraddha to Prema, but there's only eight activities, because Shraddha is not an activity. You have Shraddha, then you can perform Sadhu Sangha as the first position. Does that make sense? So Shraddha is the distinction between those. So you've gained a Jata Sukriti from Vaishnavas, and then having gotten Shraddha, then you take up that association now, you know, with seriousness. And then that takes you on.
Mm-hmm. So Vanarthan is just using activities. Vanarthan is just using activities.
Yes, because you're trying to improve the quality of your devotional service. You're trying to remove the obstacles to your devotional service. So it's an endeavor. It means by Bhajana Kriya, these things will be going on. But as it mentions, there's certain things that Krishna will just take away. But the demons that Balaram removes, you have to be aware of them and be consciously wanting to give them up. Does that make sense? Then he'll take them away. But if you're comfortable with them, then they're not going to go away. Other things will be purified, but that won't. Does that make sense? So basically, it means we say anartha nivriti because it's the process of purifying yourself from anishta bhajana kriya to nishta bhajana kriya. Right? So, the service is not stable because of impurities. And as we become purified, then it becomes stable. And as it becomes fixed and stable, then from there we see we gain a taste. Right? Because that's then what you're trying to do.
Can we say that the Sankhya and the Yogi, they are missing because they don't have Shraddha in the Veda?
They have some Shraddha, but only as much as it supports their philosophy.
Okay, not true.
No, it's not true.
And they don't know about the Vaishnava?
No, not really. They may kind of know, but they'll just see it as yet another means.
Yes.
That's all. You know, it's just like they'll see it as a religious principle. They won't see that as beyond religious principles. They don't see it as the eternal religious. So, bhakti is a process like studying shastra or being, you know, austerities or penance or giving in charity, following varnasha. To them, it'll just be another, you know. Yeah. That's the problem, is that they don't distinguish between spiritual and material, between piety and bhakti. They make a distinction between impiety and piety, but not between piety and bhakti. So that's why it appears to be, what we're getting into now, we see at this level, is before it was just understand how Krishna's there, how to connect things to Krishna, how Krishna's in everything, and how to make that connection. That was the emphasis in the first two levels. Now we see is that a distinction is being made between, means you've accepted the spiritual, but what's a devotional spiritual position and what's not? What's a devotional pious position and what's not devotional pious position? Because otherwise you may take it, oh, well, they're doing all these things that are like that. They have some faith in God like this, but it doesn't mean it's pure devotion. And it doesn't mean that it's in pursuance of pure devotion. Right? There may be some moments of sincerity, but it doesn't mean the ultimate is pure devotion. So that's then what we're trying to establish. Because that will get you into the spiritual world. Anything else will keep you less. Right? And then the pure unalloyed bhakti, that will get you into braj. So that's why even amongst that, then we make even finer distinction.
Are there two types of yogis? One parvat, one real yogi, which the Bhagavatam speaks of, which is actually a type of devotee Vaishnava, and the other one, which is like Pachandali, this perverted philosophy pursuer.
But are you meaning that they're following Astanga Yoga?
Yes.
Yes, because the point is you can do it to meditate on the Lord to become a devotee as a process, like a Satya Yuga. Or you can use it simply as a means to elevate yourself.
Like this, or the other
like
speaking.
This here. So what Patanjali is giving that people are taking and understanding is this material concept. Right? Now, whether, I think there's some places where it discusses about these, the heads of these six schools, not that they don't understand what the actual position is, but they're writing for those who don't, and at least rather than not be Vedic and completely send yourself to hell, give them a Vedic alternative in which they can elevate themselves, and in the process, hopefully they'll bump into a devotee. Because the as we say, you have to perform bhakti to make karma jnana work. So that means it being an inherent part of it, they should both be favorable towards devotees, and in the process come in contact with devotees. Does that make sense? So then in their process of fruitive activities or analyzation or whatever it is that they're doing, they may come in contact, like Prakashananda Saraswati and Lord Chaitanya. It's because they were sannyasis and jnana marg, so they discuss philosophy. And so Lord Chaitanya being a sannyasi, they invited him to discuss philosophy. Right? And then because he's the Lord, then they got that benefit. You know, or someone's doing karma. And then their priests are Vaishnavas. So then they might get some devotional benefit. Right? But we see it doesn't necessarily happen, because King Nriga, Maharaj Puchina Barhishad, he mentioned he's never heard about this transcendental position. All his Brahmins have ever taught him were material, you know, about piety, about fruitive work. They've never talked about anything more. So you can be involved in the process of karma and jnana and actually never come across it. Or like Sukadeva Goswami, he's involved in jnana, but because of the nature of, then he is somehow another, he is able, by the grace of his spiritual master, you know, his father and Krishna, to understand the actual transcendental position. So it's there, but the problem is you'll only come in contact if there's an actual real interest to know. Otherwise, if there's not, you won't. Yes.
Can we say that in our process, we come across it with Kardama and Devahuti, and then Dhruva Maharaj, they were engaged in the process of Ashtanga?
Yes, yes. And then they're following it in connection with bhakti, and this way progressing. Like that. So even if it's bhakti and Mr. Karma, if they have association of Vaishnavas, then that can switch into karma, Mr. Bhakti, and then into Shuddha Bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And then from there into Kevala Bhakti, like this, into the Vajra Bhakti. But it's the point is why not just start with the understanding of pure unalloyed devotional service? And so we shoot for pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can you also say that with Nyaya and Pachyoshita, nobody really can reach the Lord, but starting from Sankhya, it is possible if it's devotional?
It means all of them, if they're devotional, you could. The point is that that's the process they're starting with, so then, but it's going to run out of information at some point. So then if they are in touch with Vaishnavas, then they'll move forward, because it's only by being in touch with devotees that they can move forward. So let's say someone is very good at, like Vaishnav Das, right? So Vaishnav Das is someone who's very expert in the logic, the kavya, the grammar, and all these different things. So as far as having serious discussions on philosophy, he's very comfortable with that. But now coming in contact with Vaishnavas, now it gets used in its proper way. Right? But that's the whole point, is it, when you come in contact with devotees, it may start off as a major aspect, we see that it starts to come into a position. Does that make sense? So, as we see, is that if someone really would like to know nicely, then any of the Babaji's are able to explain it. But if they come in and they just want to argue over points and all that, and prove themselves and this and that, then that's when his position has real meaning. was that reason? So then you see those kind of discussions, they ask him to speak. But because he has that association with them, it's not that he doesn't know what they know, but it's just that he can function in that kind of environment of yan because that's his background. So that's just natural. That's why you see those living entities that have been in the material world, once they come to the perfectional platform, it's a standard thing for them to come and preach in the material world because they have that experience. Not that the others can't, but it's just natural. They would because they've been there. Been there, done that. So then,
Maharaj, so all objects of Krishna worship, Krishna worship throughout wherever, not connected to the sampradaya, are not Agnyasukriti, they're just karmakanda.
They're just piety. They may be jnanakanda also, but the point is they're just piety.
Yeah.
Once they're connected to parampara, then they become Agnyasukriti. And once they develop faith, then we call that bhakti. Right?
Nobody knows this or nobody has spoken about this, and the devotees are taking those good Hindus, such Krishna worshippers to be like as good as devotees, and if you can hang out with them, that's okay.
Point is if you're hanging out to encourage them in devotional service, that's all right, but if you are learning from them, then that's not the right way to do it.
Considering that they are as good as us, they're also like...
But...
This fine point.
Yes, this fine point. Well, that's because sometimes it comes up, why are we getting into these fine little details? Mm-hmm. But this is why. Because you have to be able to tell the difference between impiety, piety. It means the difference between vikarma, akarma, and karma. Right? And then, once you understand that, then you have to be able to tell the difference between what is karma and what is bhakti. Right? So you have to be able, and then within bhakti, what is mixed devotional service, pure devotional service, and pure unalloyed devotional service. So there's a lot of fine things to understand. So, yes, means these, if they are favorable and all these kind of things, though they don't necessarily have such strong faith in all that, then it's all right. Then they come around, you do things with them, you go to their house for a program and these kind of things, that's fine. But the point is that it should be understood what position they're at, so therefore what you have to preach on, how you have to preach, what you have to be, where you can put some energy, where you have to be careful. Like that. Does that make sense? Like, they're being vegetarian. And they offer whatever they have to Krishna. And so that's good, and they're enthusiastic, and they're very happy to do that. But with time, then they can learn what vegetarian things would be the natural thing to offer to Krishna? Right? Does that make sense? You go to Domino's in Bombay, you can get the Jain option. Right, so they won't be onion and garlic and stuff like that. So for many of them, that they're being very Krishna conscious here. We're Hare Krishna. We do this stuff. But with time, then they start to learn that maybe that's not the thing to do. Does that make sense? That wouldn't be a standard thing. Emergency, but whatever. It was not. Does that make sense? So you have to know, because if you push that other too much, then they become disturbed and they can't live their lifestyle, and so then they would just go back to whatever they were before. So you have to be able to see where it is so that they're progressing. But if you can't tell the difference, then you end up eating at Domino's. Yeah. Calcutta, they don't have the Jain option. I'm sorry.
They have
something. Oh, yes, they have something. Yes.
Many times, like, you didn't go on a parikrama or something like that, and then ISKCON centers and prasad is not available. So usually we take shelter of the, for example, we have been to the Sringeri Math and we honor prasad over there, and that was completely ISKCON Mayavad center. So is that okay?
Is it okay to eat food at the Sringeri Math. I would tend to avoid it. I would rather eat in the local guy down the road smoking the beedies than eat a Sringeri.
And what if they give us the option to cook and then we feed ourselves?
That's fine. But the point is they've given the items, you're going to get some benefit with that. But the point is, because they're giving charity and all that, that's nice that they do. But otherwise, I tend to like that. Now, if by eating these other places, Sringeri, the area is such that everybody knows everything, so you can't do that, then you're going to eat somewhere there. Then you eat with them or at some Brahmin's house or this and that. But if nobody's going to know, better eat, you know, down at the local dhaba than with those guys. No, you really like the food of the Sringeri. She thought it was good. It was better than the Govardhan Math and all that. And Jyoti Math's a bit austere and all that. And Dwarka, well, that because the Guja, it's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah? No?
The Mina.
Sorry?
The Dwarka is the Mina.
Yes.
Culture difference.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's the whole point.
No, actually, in India, when the foreign people came... When the foreign people came to India, and knowing no vaccine, you can eat any place, you know? Like, starting with the Golden Temple and...
Oh, yeah. No, the point means it's not that... Someone like the Golden Temple, at least there's a concept of like this, but they're not directly atheists. They at least try to not be atheists, so... These kind of things that can be done. It's just that it just depends on your options. You know, it's just like, let's say you're traveling, you take food with you, that's always better. If not, then, you know, the gas stations are there, you find something to eat. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just you use whatever's the best thing. But it's not, the point is it's about the mentality. That's what makes the difference between all of these. The secondary form is not actually the main form. You know, it is the form, but it's variable. The actual essence of bhakti is bhakti itself. It's the devotion which is done. The form is secondary, but the difference between pure devotional service and mixed is pure means it's about Krishna. Mixed means it's about ourselves connected to Krishna. Right? In other words, the pure means it's about Krishna and how we can be engaged in that. The other is how what I'm doing can be connected to Krishna. Right? There'll be a difference there. It's the same thing, it's just which way you're dealing with it. So that's the difficulty. And as long as there's not pride, that humility is there, then we're able to... maintain ourselves properly in you know, from the mode of goodness and get up to pure goodness. But if we're proud of our position, that drops us to ignorance. Our devotional service in ignorance. Though it may be done nicely and everything like that. It's just like means we can like Kapila Muni mentions that if someone's proud of their material qualifications, right, intelligence, social position, whatever it may be that's considered important in this day. So we're proud of that, and we think because of that I'm a better devotee. You know, it's just like, okay, I come from it, I'm a doctor, and not only that, I'm a specialized doctor, and of specializations it's considered something very, you know, amongst doctors a very high level, like let's say you're a neural brain surgeon or something. So then becoming a devotee, naturally there'll be more of a devotee than the guy who just ran the little pawn shop down there. Right? That's what they're thinking. And we will generally, because of our conditioning of material things, what we may even think, well, yeah, it sounds okay. You know, or it's natural. But now if we look at it from another standpoint, you know, just the logical thing, you know, how it has that funny way of making it really absurd. Let us say, what would you think of a chef who says, I'm a better chef because I have a better kitchen. My pots are much better than your pots, so that makes me a better cook. Yeah, you understand? When you put it in that, you go, well, that means he's actually, it's his pots that are the cook, not him. You understand? So when you put it, shift it like that, then you can see it's not very glorious. But if you don't do that, then it will naturally be thought, because people are into all the social procedure and that, so they naturally think that, you know, the best of both worlds, right? You know, yeah.
Well, the doubt can be that the person who's accomplished, like in the example, maturity, means he has qualifications, means he has more control of the senses, more control of the mind. So if he applies the same stuff...
If he applies...
But we are talking about devotee, means he does apply, and it means he can reach the results hypothetically faster, because he puts his energy into it and his focus.
Yes. But is it done with devotion? Or is it done because he's just so good at this and check out how good I am?
But if we compare both newcomers, they both apply whatever material stuff they have because it's nature.
Yes.
But in the process, they get purified.
Yes. But does it mean that because they're more expert at dealing with the secondary and producing a secondary result, they're more advanced than the primary?
Not necessarily.
Easiest way is to just say no.
Just to get me done.
Yes. No, but that's the point, is because advancement is the primary, not the secondary. Now, it's not that you can't see symptoms of the primary from the secondary. But the point is can they consistently apply their skill?
That's individual.
That's the point, is that's what you tell us. Now, if everybody's watching, you know what I'm saying? Then that's something. But if it's something where no one's going to see, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole point. Is that it's a matter of, is it going to be when they're doing management things that no one's going to know about? That means, like, let's say, they know management, no one else knows management. So there's so many details they're going to take care of that no one else will even recognize if they've even done. And are they going to go on very nicely doing it because they know how to do that and it's for Krishna? Or is it going to come at, no one knows what I'm doing, I'm working so hard, I'm just... Then you can understand that they're not as advanced. So, that you are applying yourself and Krishna's giving the intelligence so that you're working with the secondary, derives better secondary results, that may be by Krishna's mercy that's coming. But it's a matter of, just because you can do that by your karma doesn't necessarily mean that they're more advanced. But it also doesn't mean that when it comes to getting that work done, you don't have them do it. You have them do it, not the other person who's necessarily more advanced and can do it. Because you're engaging them to do it for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the new guy comes in, he's been in the temple 3 months, but he's an expert manager. You may have him manage the festival rather than the guy that's been there for the last 30 years and this and that. And, no, you don't do that. It means, in other words, to manage the festival, he's the best manager. He manages it. But under the direction of someone who can see what they appreciate their management and how to see that that's connected to Krishna, then they'll advance. Right? So you have to know who does what.
Mm-hmm. All right. Meantime, and nectar of devotion define pure devotional service very exactly.
Yes.
Then different preachers, they put emphasis on the different aspects. Some just say it's a general presentation. They say up to a certain level, which means basically prem bhakti, we practice mixed devotion service. However, some, they say, no, on each level we do practice pure devotional service, but it's not completely pure. It's with parts of this part is mixed, that part is mixed, and like that. So it makes it very different approach.
Yes. But we see as the acharyas bring these things out. So Vishwanath brings out the point that devotional service starts at prema. Before that, technically, it's not bhakti. And then Baladev points out it's in pursuance of bhakti, it's counted as bhakti. Right? So What's the advantages and disadvantages of this? So to encourage one that you're practicing the devotional process and that will bring you to prema, then that's the encouragement there, as long as the attitude is right. But if we see that there's pride, then immediately you switch to Vishwanath's presentation. So in other words, for your individual contemplation, you use that. And if somebody's proud, you use that. Otherwise, then Baladev's is the standard, as we see as Prabhupada in the Gita, dedicated to Baladev Vibhushan. But it's not that the purports of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur are not there. It's just that that flavor is the flavor that we use in preaching. So it's only to correct something improper due to stubbornness and pride that we'll use the reality, that ultimate reality. But the point is that it's connected to Krishna. That's always progressive, because everything is Krishna. Does that make sense? So there's no contradiction between the two. It's just, when do you apply it? You know, it's just like,
when you say that Vishwa Bhakti is starting from myself and connected to Krishna, and Shuddha Bhakti is really starting from Krishna himself. So now, from the 9 stages from Shriha to Prema, at which particular point in time does a devotee shift from this consciousness and mind to Krishna?
When do they shift in consciousness from?
From myself to Krishna.
To myself to Krishna. Basically, pure devotional service means where it shifts. So now, how much of that is there? Because we see in meditation, you have that, it's occasional, and then it's more regular, and then it's steady, and then it becomes fixed, and then it becomes deep. So you have those levels. So you're trying to do everything for Krishna. That's your particular position. That's pure devotional service. So you can have a neophyte who's a pure devotee, right? But the point is how much of the time they're absorbed in that. That's another, absorbed in Krishna, that's another thing. So it's just a matter of when you're trying to give up karma and jnana just to please Krishna. That's where the switch is.
And see that it's more progressive than
Anartha Nivriti. See, by following the process of chanting, right, means Chaito Darpana Marjanam and Nam Nam Agadi Bahurudha. This explains the process of chanting, the Sankirtan movement, and how, we have that, the impurities. So, as we remove impurities, then we're able to practice the third verse, which is that humility, tolerance, respecting others, and not looking for respect. Then we can be steady in devotional service, right? Because that represents nishtha. Does that make sense? So this process is there, so as we become purified, then we become more fixed in the devotional process. Then coming to, a solid position, then continuing that, we become more stable, and we develop a taste. Because as you have less, there's less obstacles to devotional service, the taste one gets from devotional service then is greater is greater. And so it takes up, it becomes more observable or more appreciated to oneself. So that brings us to the next stage.
So this particular point that you mentioned about, one facing less number of obstacles implies the taste increases. So this is like true in all circumstances, like problems, because sometimes.
No, what's the rationale? Is it true in all circumstances? What is the specific doubt?
The doubt is that sometimes we see in the scriptures also examples wherein there are a lot of status of abilities, but still their taste is not being disturbed at all.
Okay, so means there's no obstacles. Okay. So here we... Huh? What's the question? question basically is, if anartha nivriti, by removing obstacles, then we get taste. So the doubt comes up is that we have devotees like Prahlad Maharaj and others who have so many obstacles, but they still have taste. So is removing of obstacles actually has anything to do with taste? Right. So what we mean here in obstacles, it means obstacles to performing devotional service. That means devotional service being the primary element. So what is the obstacle to me remembering Krishna, seeing it in connection to Krishna, and dedicating it to Krishna? That's the obstacle. Now the secondary obstacle on I'm trying to use the particular knowledge and skill to accomplish a particular result to offer to Krishna. The obstacles that come there don't necessarily change whether one is more advanced or less advanced in devotional service. And I hope that doesn't annoy anyone that now the religious process that they felt that they came for is that, well, this is not going to give it to me, so what is? Does that make sense? So therefore we see Prahlad Maharaj in the secondary, or Yudhishthira Maharaj is the secondary only, that the things that got. So we're worried about obstacles in the primary, not in the secondary. If we are worried about it in the secondary, then that means then that's you know, a karma, a jnana, mystery, bhakti. That's definite. And you could probably also add on to that, you know, as we're extending, you know, you have bhakti, then karma, mystery, bhakti, then we have sakam, karma, mystery, bhakti. Because it's about ourselves and what we're going to get. So when we say obstacles, we mean the obstacle to my sakam. Right? That's what we mean. So we have to be able to distinguish between my desires that I want, that I'm going to engage in Krishna service, and being engaged in Krishna service. They're compatible, but they're two different things. You know, because I'm thinking that I can, if I have this situation, then I can do devotional service. No, you can do devotional service in any situation. That's why they show people like Prahlad Maharaj and others, is because no matter what the situation, they're doing devotional service. And if we're saying, no, if this is here, it's like that, and why isn't Krishna giving? Because then I'll be more devotional. Because the point is, no, you can be devotional without this situation. It's a matter of surrender.
What's the obstacles in the primary and obstacles in the secondary?
Obstacles in primary is we don't see things in connection with Krishna. And the obstacles in secondary means whatever form you're working in, you know, physical, the emotional, the intellectual, there are obstacles to that. You know, it's like you want to do Mangal Arati, but the door's locked and the key's not in the regular place because the guy the night before took the key back to the ashram. Right? It doesn't affect your devotion, it affects the expression, the form that you're going to use this expression. Does that make sense? You know, so much of the time we connect that the external form, that is the actual symptom of bhakti and reciprocation of the Lord. But that is because we take it from the material. Because we're used to piety is devotion. Oh, isn't he so devotional? You know, he's there praying to God and all that kind of things. But what's he praying for? That makes a difference on whether it's pure or mixed. So mixed means the emphasis is on the secondary that will be used in bhakti, as opposed to the emphasis is on the primary, where you're engaging it in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that makes the distinction between the, especially the neophyte and the madhyam. Does that make sense? Like that. And then the uttama, it's just about it pleases Krishna. It's not whether it's more, see, for the neophyte, it's this is what I want to do, this is what I can do for Krishna and things like that, and this is what I'm comfortable with. And so I prefer all these facilities. So the better facilities, the more comfortable I am in devotional service. I become inspired as the facilities increase. Madhyama means if that's not the position, but there are situations that work better for devotional service, so you're more comfortable in them, but it's not that you won't go on without them. Does that make sense? So you're comfortable in your particular situation of varna and ashram and being able to engage your conditioning in the Lord's service. You've worked it out, what works, what doesn't work, and you just do that. Right? So it's that's what we call nishkam karma yoga. Right? The one where it's about what you want and this, that's sakam karma yoga. Means your own sakam. Nishkam means without desire. Right? Now what we're talking about, sarva-dharmam parityaja, now it's about what pleases Krishna. Now whether it pleases you or not, is comfortable for you or not, and all this. It's just like, let's say, the gopis. Right? Now would you say it's a natural, standard, comfortable position for girls to go out in the middle of the night not knowing where they're going with no arrangements? Yes or no? No. Right? So, because they don't even, that means if there's some arrangement, it's there, but they may not even know where Krishna is. You know? Because even you say, okay, he's at Govindastali, it's a big place. Or he's at Govardhan, it's a big place. You have to find him. Huh? No phones, yeah. No, what do you call it? Sat-navs, you know, like this. There's a problem. Yeah, you can't type into Find My Krishna. Right? Yeah. There you go. Oh, how close are you? Oh. Right. Okay. Yeah. But they're just trying to please Krishna because Krishna's called. So they're giving up all of their happy, their natural, comfortable positions to please Krishna. So that's the thing. So that's where you see the difference in the Uttama over the Madhyama. Madhyama is glorious. That's can be the platform of pure devotional service. But it still has the elements that you're engaging conditioning. While there, it's not. It's not about the conditioning. We start with our conditioning. What can I do? Okay, here's the situation. Therefore, this can be done according to my conditioning. Right? There, this is the situation. You're attracted to what services can be done for Krishna. And you have a form that naturally supports that. So in other words, the primary is first, and then the secondary is manifest. But for us, we're starting with secondary because we don't. The primary is dormant, and then by engaging the secondary in the Lord's service, the primary starts to manifest. Does that make sense? So we're working with reverse engineering. But it's not that the direct can't be used, it's just that we don't do it.
Maharaj, the qualification of Adi people, their argument is...
Adi people.
Vadi, qualification. Is that, see, this bhakti thing in the heart is unquantifiable. But we see that given 100 Bhagavad Gitas to the ex-doctor or to the ex-janitor, the ex-doctor can sell those 100 Bhagavad Gitas more and then the ex-janitor. Therefore, we do this what we do.
I didn't quite catch, because the point is that if the doctor goes into the bathroom and the toilet doesn't flush, then he can't do anything about it. With all his brains and all his you know, his degrees, his, you know, it doesn't matter. Get out all his tools, he can't do anything.
Yeah, so that we do. We understand practically that the janitor should be given this service. But when it comes to, like, giving bhakti, say, in the form of a quantifiable thing, like the sale of Bhagavad Gitas, we will prefer this thing.
The doctor, but yeah. what if the plumber is a better book distributor?
He can't articulate so sophisticatedly. He'll not give the
people don't necessarily always go by that. You know what I'm saying? You'll see is that we have the kind of concept, you know, the bold dynamic, you know, like things like that, book distributor and that, but they're there and they're good. But the sustainable ones, a few of them maybe, but the ones that have been distributing books for the last 30, 40 years, they don't necessarily use that. Some of them are just very quiet and unassuming and come up to you and speak very nice, and people like the interaction. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, you can use that corporate approach, and if you're good at it, it may work very nicely. That's nice. But the whole point is that's not necessarily what works. Like this last December, the most big books distributed, I think it was done by one person that I don't even know if they have any material qualifications. You know? I mean, it's just, they don't have any degree, they don't have anything. I mean, absolutely nothing. And they did something like 6,000, you know, Gitas or something during the marathon.
In India?
Huh?
India?
No, it's in Finland. Like that, I mean, one person.
In Calcutta, the most number of books were distributed in Howrah Station. And there nothing was. You need to have a table, display, and a mic to show.
Yeah,
that's it.
I remember in Assam, it was in Kumbh Mela. No, not Kumbh Mela. Sagar Mela. All you had to do is have the books. You got the books, you got your bag, you took them out. People just came up and said, how much?
Yes.
And so you're trying to give it out and take the money, and because it's too slow and there's too many people, they just start reaching in your bag, pulling out the book and putting the money. Like that.
They said that in Japan.
Huh?
In rush hours, that's what they did. They didn't even speak anything because nobody speaks English.
Okay.
And the book distributors, they would just stand in front of the railways. So they got underground, okay. And the people would come out. Nobody would speak. They just give the book, the person takes the book and gives the money. Nobody would speak. And either the Vrindavan is a very big book distributor. That's her system.
Yeah. Somehow in Hong Kong, you give the book and then they look at it and hand it back. Yeah. So it's just, that's the whole point, is it's just that sincerity. So you may have that they are able to do, but you may have that they can't, because the point is, just because they're a doctor doesn't mean that they actually know how to interact and talk to people. They know how to do their work. So that's why they have a secretary and stuff like that, because they make the appointments, they talk to the people, and they just come out and tell you, yeah, for this operation, you know, the others, yeah, it'll be good, this, that, and he's a good doctor and that, and comes out, yeah, you know, it's 90%, 10% doesn't work, so, you know, we can't guarantee, so let's see how it goes, you know, so best of luck, you know, like that. You know, I want to go with this doctor, you know, like that. You know, so they're nerds. So it doesn't mean that they're socially able to function. In India, maybe more, but in the West, not necessarily.
Salesman will do better.
Sorry?
Salesman will do a very better job.
Yeah, someone who's a salesman, you know, he does a fantastic job. But then the point is can they sustain it? Because then they need the recognition. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like one of the biggest Sankirtan temples, I think it was what do you call it? Scotland. They didn't read out the scores, individual scores. They just said that we did this many books, we collected this much. They didn't do individual scores. Like that. You know, and they were very, very steady. The same people were there the whole time. You know, and then there are those who, if you read the scores, they become inspired. Then they can continue for some time. But how long, you know, so this and another. So all these things, it's just down to the individual. So they may have, they may not have. That professional may have so many contacts, you can call up friends and say, hey, why don't you take, you know, 1,000, you know, you got a factory, take a, you know, that's what they do. I know they do it in Calcutta and stuff like that. They got a factory of 10,000 people, take 10,000 units. So the point is that it's done. So it goes both ways. So it comes down to, if you're sincere, you want to do it, Krishna works it out for you. I've heard of devotees ladies with their baby going onto the subway in New York and distributing them. You know, like that. They just go and listen. You know, because the baby's, you know, it's not noisier like this and that, so they're able to peacefully go and you know, and they're dressed in saris and the whole thing. People are cool. They buy stuff. So it's very individual because it's between the soul and Krishna. So that's the point, is there is no obstacle of what's your conditioning. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, okay, how many dacoits, I mean hardcore dacoits, you know, like full-on Devi dacoits, you know, then come out to be great sages and poets. So how does that happen? It's because of the Lord's mercy. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. It's the Lord wants it works, and doesn't want it doesn't work. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
Second sentence. Okay, that explains the position of the yoga, right? In contrast, Bhadarayana Vyasadeva's philosophy Vedanta emphasizes devotional service not only as the primary means to liberation, but also as identical with liberation itself. Right? So the point of liberation is to be on the transcendental platform. So bhakti is actually what is the best method to get you, and it actually is non-different. Liberation is included in bhakti. Well, they use bhakti to get liberation, but liberation is already included in bhakti. Worship of the Lord continues up to the point of liberation, and indeed goes on in the liberated state also, as the Vedas reveal. Vedanta Sutra 4.1.12. So, in other words, by bhakti you can get to the liberated platform, and through bhakti liberation remains. Otherwise, one may say, okay, yes, when I get to a liberated platform, then I'll perform devotional service. Just like for the karmis, that, yes, when I become rich and famous and I'm too old to do anything, you know, material, then I'll take up devotional service. So the point is, no, bhakti is always what's viable at both positions. It is the system. Oh, that submarine makes that sound.
Sonar.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Okay, now it's gone. Somebody's bold. Okay. Just thinking. So many things go by now. We have a sub go by. Okay. Huh?
On the truck.
Yeah, on the truck. Gautama Rishi, in his Nyaya Sutras, proposes that one can attain liberation by negating both illusion and unhappiness. Right, because if you get rid of illusion, then you're supposed to have reality. You get rid of unhappiness, you have happiness. So you have dukkha, janma, pravritti, dosha, mitya, jnananam, utarotar rapaye, tad anantara bhavad aparvargaha. By successively dispelling false conceptions, bad character, entangling action, rebirth and misery, the disappearance of one of these allowing the disappearance of the next, one can achieve final liberation. Nyaya Sutra 112. So this is what they're going to do, is just going to analyze what is proper, what's not, keep what's proper, get rid of what's not proper. Now, where does the potency come for that? Where does the piety come to do that? That they're not bringing up. Right? Because without bhakti, where do you get the piety for that? But since Nyaya philosophers believe that awareness is not an essential quality of the soul, they teach that a liberated soul has no consciousness. So you use consciousness to get unconscious, but then the whole point is you can just sleep and be unconscious. You know, so then by that you could be 50% liberated because you sleep 12 hours a day. You know, and then if you're a drunkard, then you're completely liberated. You know, yeah. So. When you're sleeping, there's no activity.
No kamas.
I mean, it depends. On, you disturb the person next to you or something like that. But my point being is that. That's all the farther they're taking, so it's not a very developed system as far as how well they're thinking. Now, it's way more developed than your modern concepts of logic and how you're going to use it. So it's more developed than they're using it, trying to elevate themselves up to a liberated platform. So that's quite intellectual, but as far as being really developed as far as the soul goes, then not so developed, right? The secondary aspect is quite developed, but the primary is very, very undeveloped. The Nyaya idea of liberation thus puts the soul in the condition of a dead stone. This attempt by the Nyaya philosophers to kill the soul's innate consciousness is here called Sato Mritim by the personified Vedas. But the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.17 unequivocally states, Yota eva, the jiva soul is always a knower. So whether they're whether they're in a conditioned or a liberated state, they still are a knower. A knower, not the knower. Right? The Mayavadins say go from being a knower into being the knower. You know?
Since the time we are doing this six philosophies, I was always thinking this, that they should be trying to kill the consciousness.
Yes. Right? Yes. Like that. Or just party. Right? They're either trying to party, you know, and then those who have partied and, you know, the hangovers start to get to them, then they try to annihilate their existence. Right. So it's either I can enjoy existence, and when you find out I can't, then they try to annihilate existence. So that's all that's going on. And then you annihilate for a while, that gets boring, and then you have to do something, so then you party again.
Painfully dreadful.
Sorry?
Painfully dreadful.
Painfully dreadful.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's very, very.
Yes.
When you say that about this particular point, that the jiva is a knower and Krishna is
a jiva is a knower.
Is a knower and Krishna is the knower. But you also have that Krishna is knowledge itself. Krishna is knowledge itself and Krishna is also a knower. So similarly, having the same principle like the jiva, where we can say that jiva is a knower and he is knowledge itself, Krishna is knowledge.
The jiva itself is knowledge. Why would we say, what was our reason for saying the jiva is knowledge?
Because he has knowledge of himself in the liberated state.
He has knowledge of himself. But then we see, as that Prabhupada points out, is you can look in the mirror, and if it's pitch black, you can't see anything. But as soon as the sun comes up, then you can see. So the point is by knowing the Lord, then you know yourself. Because otherwise, knowing yourself without knowing the Lord, is it actually knowing yourself? No, because unless you understand that I am the servant of the Lord, then only you can know yourself. So they may have knowledge, and even if you say it's very minuscule, just like, yes, you can say we're all God, but we're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair God, and so that's not a very great, and then you have unlimited God, so then who's more God? Right? Although the soul is in truth both conscious and active, the proponents of Shankhya philosophy wrongly separate these two functions of the living force, Atmani, Yecha, Vidham, ascribing consciousness to the soul, Purusha, and activity to material nature, Prakriti. According to Shankhya Karika, 1920? Or it's
19-20.
But I'm 19-20 means it's 19th chapter, 20th verse, it's 19 and 20, and something else? Or
it's
not mentioned. Okay. Thus, since the apparent differences between Purushas are only superficial, being due to the various modes of nature that cover them, the Purusha's true status is proven to be that of a witness, characterized by his separateness, his passive indifference, his status of being an observer, and his inactivity. Thus, by contact with the soul, the unconscious subtle body seems to be conscious, while the soul appears to be the doer, although he is aloof from the activities of nature's modes. Right? So, to some degree, this is correct. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that why is the soul? It means, yes, the body is the one that's acting. The field is actually what's transforming, because it's the material cause. Now, we can be part of that as the instrumental cause. But what we have to appreciate is, why would somebody who is inactive and only an observer, you know, by their definition, why would they get involved in anything? Right? Unless they have the nature to be active. And even if we ascribe they're not active, but they're an observer, observation is still an activity. You're engaging the senses, you're using the mind, you're using the intelligence. Otherwise, how do you observe? Right? So, then the point comes down is that the soul is interested in the activities of the material world because they are active themselves. Because then now they're trying to be active following the Shankya philosophy to become inactive. But they're still using activity. So they've gone from karma activity to jnana activity. But activity is the nature of soul. Consciousness means there's an activity. Right? There's existence, there's an activity, there's a uniqueness, all these different things. There's a purpose. Like, there's a purpose to consciousness. If you're conscious and nothing's accomplished, are you actually conscious? Right? If there's not some understanding, some identity, some goal, are you actually conscious? Understand? Do you actually exist? So that's the whole point, is that in here is that they're not thinking far enough. So you think, see, they think farther than the Nyaya, but not as far as Vedanta. So that's what we're saying, is all these have their position up to some point. Yes, so the Nyaya will say you should be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit. And then the first verse of Bhagavatam, that's considered actual truth. The ability to tell the difference between matter and spirit. So then logic is used as a secondary tool to understand this, but it's based on the primary understanding of Krishna. Does that make sense? Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.31-39 that begins Karta Shastrartha Vat-tvata. The jiva soul must be a performer of actions because the injunctions of the scripture must have some purpose. Because otherwise you're elevating the soul connects, and they get the benefit. Otherwise, all that benefit would be left with the body. So then you perform the activity of liberation, the body would get liberated, the soul wouldn't. No, but the soul is getting the benefit. That means then that the action must be, there's a purpose. So the action is connected with the soul. Acharya Baladeva Vidyabhushana, in his Govinda Bhashya, explains, the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Why? Because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose. Shastrata Vatvata. For example, such scriptural injunctions as Swarga Kamo, Yajyeta. One who desires to attain to heaven should perform ritual sacrifice. And Atmanam Eva Lokam Upasita. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.15. One should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom. Are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. Right? Because dead matter, what does it need to do? Pradhan's already Pradhan, whether it's manifest as 24 elements or it's a homogenous. mass, it doesn't matter, it's still what it is. So why would the soul have to deal with that unless it's the one getting the benefit? Right? Now saying that we're the doer mean we're the supreme doer. That at that point then we'll say no, but in this case that we're the doer, yes, we are one of four doers. But we're a subservient one. We're actually the least of the four. Right? Because the Lord is the greatest. He encompasses the internal and the external. Then you have the next, the internal or the external. Then you have the jiva can take part in that process. Right? If he's God conscious, then in the internal. If he's not, in the external. So, if the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed actions by convincing him that he can act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such a mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature. Like, the rock doesn't matter. You know, we tell the rock if it does 100 Ashwamedha yajnas, it can be Lord Indra. Right? The rock just sits there. It doesn't care.
That's a major flaw in the philosophy because they have described activity to Prakriti.
Yes, major flaw because they describe activity to Prakriti. Activity to Prakriti, when activity is actually the soul. That Prakriti transforms, where does that potency to transform come from? From Krishna. So therefore then the whole process is the relationship between the living entity and Krishna using the medium of his energy. Right, so we're engaging the external, but through the authority of the internal. So we, as servants of Krishna, serving the servant of the servant from the internal, then we engage the external in Krishna's service. Stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura Vrinda ki.